Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Chai with Jams podcast, season two. I'm Ritika Agrawal, your host, where I sit down and have a virtual cup of tea with some of the most inspiring and successful individuals from around the world. Join me as I delve into their stories, explore their triumphs and challenges, and discover the ingredients that help brew them success. This season, we're focusing on individuals that are on the rise, that wear multiple hats, and have insights that can help transform your everyday life. Please join me in welcoming our final guest for the season, Ankur Rathi, an Indian-American actor and dancer best known for his roles in the Amazon series Four More Shots, Please, Zoya Akhtar's Made in Heaven, movies like Shahzada, and many, many more. Hi, Ankur. Welcome to the Chai with Jams podcast, season two. This is our final episode, so we're definitely wrapping up with a bang. Thank you so much for making the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy that you chose me as your finale episode for this season. That's awesome.
I'm so excited. I know we have so much to talk about. I'm really curious about your journey. But I always like my guests to introduce themselves. I'm sure a lot of people already know who you are, but can you just give us a brief introduction of who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am an Indian American actor. I grew up in the States and have spent the last 10 years working in Bombay. I am a recent husband. I got married about 2 years ago. My sister is also an actress. My sister-in-law is also an actress. I grew up in a household of no professional artists, and now I'm surrounded by them. And so I've had the very good fortune of a very diverse array of experiences through already the last 33 years of my life. So I feel very fortunate. I've had an awesome upbringing, great parents, a lot of love in my household growing up. And I get to share that love with others through my characters and my performances. And I love that.
I love that. That is such a beautiful introduction. I love that you spoke about your family, most importantly. That's really sweet. And speaking of the fact that you are not from the industry, but now have so many years of experience, let's start with that big dream, Bollywood. What was your pivotal moment of knowing you wanted to be an actor and knowing that Bombay was the place to be?
I think there was like two steps to that. The first was like knowing that's what I wanted to do. And the second was like having the courage to actually say it out loud. Mm-hmm. I must have been like five years old or 6 years old. I used to watch, my grandmother used to kind of like babysit us while my parents were at work. Actually, my sister wasn't even born then. And we would just watch, she just loved Hindi films. Mm-hmm. We would watch like two or three back to back to back. And I just like, I knew it wasn't real. And I don't know how and why I knew that it wasn't real. And I knew that that was a profession of sorts. And I just like was enamored by the dialogue delivery, the music and the dance, and by the fight sequences. And I would like, as with a lot of Indian Americans in that time, we'd rewatch a lot of movies. So at that time, I'd become familiar with a lot of the dialogues and stuff. And so I would just get up and reenact this stuff while it's happening live. And I just loved it. And I knew there was like, that was when the seed was planted. I was like, oh, I want to be an actor. Like I don't even think I had the term actor, but I was like, I want to do what all these guys are doing. Cause I kept seeing them in different films. Yeah. I don't want to say distracted, but I was maybe encouraged to focus on, you know, my education, make that the major priority in my life, which I did. And yet somehow gravitated and kept finding myself in dance studios, dancing, singing, learning the tabla briefly. And, you know, I just was always drawn to the performing arts. And somewhere in high school, then I was introduced to musical theater, started acting as a result of musical theater. And, you know, but always very, very shy about ever saying to anyone that that's what I wanted to do professionally. So it wasn't until like maybe sophomore or junior year of college that I told my good friend Chicago Roy that, hey, I want to be an actor. It took me a long time to get there.
We're definitely going to dive more into, you know, that whole journey of, you know, where the seed was first planted and then how you, you know, finally came and told your friend that you want to be an actor. Do you remember like your most favorite movie watching with your grandmom?
No. It was so long ago.
Any favorite dialogue? Any dialogue that you remember that you would always reenact?
I mean, like, you know, I think back to like films like Dar, you know, with Shah Rukh. I think there's a lot of Sanjay Dutt films we used to watch. What's the one with Madhuri, the Khalnayak? There was like probably a lot of Sunny Deol films. And she was really into like the Macho Man, yes, Bollywood star. Yeah. I don't remember watching too much like Hum Aapke Hain Kaun. I don't remember watching too many Aamir films. But a lot of that, like, I watched a lot of Amitabh, you know, Amitji's films and stuff, obviously, and grew up on those. But yeah, nothing in specific. It was my oldest, my probably like, it was the Dharma films that probably had the most like lasting impression in terms of remembering dialogue, just because my sister was obsessed. I mean, she must have watched, you know, Kuch Kuch Hota Hai and Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham like maybe like 60, 70 times, you know. And so like it was just always playing in our household.
Yes, I fully relate to this. And you grew up in LA, right? So did you go back a lot to India and then also stay in LA and watch these movies? Like, how was that experience?
Yes, I was born in India. I was born in Haryana, but mainly grew up in San Diego. Okay. And then went back to India actually very rarely growing up. I had most of my family had kind of, you know, migrated over to the States little by little. So we still had a bunch of relatives in the village, but I must have gone back, you know, between, you know, from a young age to much older, maybe only a handful of times.
Wow.
It was, which is why, like, the move to Bombay from New York City when I made it, now in hindsight, just seems insane. It just seems like, what were you thinking? But yeah, I mean, yeah, so I not too much.
Okay, no, fair enough. Because the reason I was asking is because you kind of touched on it briefly, and I know that your grandmom really plays that important role as to why you enjoyed movies. But were there other influences in your childhood that really gave you that dream that, you know, nay, I want to be in a creative profession? Because as you're growing up in a South Asian family, it's always like education, tech, or engineering, or doctor, or like, you know, those kind of professions are the ones that are always amplified as compared to acting, especially when you're not a part of the industry. But like, did you have more experiences growing up, apart from, you know, watching movies with your grandmom, that were, you know, reassuring that yes, you deserve to be in a creative profession when you grow up?
Yeah, I think dance is probably the most culturally accessible for Indians, more than acting, right? It's probably like dance is the easiest. And then I don't want to say easy in terms of an art form, I'm just saying accessibility. Like Diwali Mela ho raha hai, like bacche ko choreography sikha diya, like go and perform type of a thing. So it's very accessible. Sangeet, also very accessible, but requires more discipline practice and like a guru shishya type of relationship, and acting probably the most distant in that way in terms of training and training institutions. So for me it was dancing. Like I would like watch stuff, and I had a bunch of older cousins that are, you know, shout out to Priyanka Saharan and Deepika Singh Iyer, and you know, these girls, like watching them perform, I was like enamored. It's like what I saw on cinema, I was seeing happening live before my eyes, and I was just like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And I was looking at some home videos from when I was maybe like 6, 7 years old, and like all of us cousins, you know, maybe like 9 to probably 12 of us, there's just music playing and the stereo's black, and we're all just dancing for hours. Mm. So I grew up around artistic people, creative people, I'll say artistic people, but maybe not people who wanted to pursue it like professionally.
Yeah.
And as a result, that kind of got me into doing performance as a dancer. I used to perform every year at the Diwali Mela. I used to perform outside of that too. And then I started getting into dance classes, and I would get a lot of encouragement and praise from my family when I would do that. You know, people would be like, I remember I used to love dancing to that song, Mukabla, with Prabhudeva. I was just obsessed with that music video. And, and like, I would just like, I had like a little outfit that I would put on, and like, my parents would be like, you know, some, दोस्त अंकल आए हैं, ये अंकल आया है, बेटा वो मुकाबला करके दिखाना सबके लिए. You know, yeah. I would just go and like put on the outfit and I would go and perform. And the act of performing, like there was no craft behind it. It was just pure joy, creative expression. And I had the good fortune of honestly being around people who are not like art critics.
Yeah.
You know, like my wife's experience is very different. She comes from four generations of artists, you know.
Oh, wow.
For me, it was like, no matter what I did, they'd be like, kya baat, they're very good, very good. And so that encouraged me, you know, that made me feel like, oh, I've got something special.
Yeah.
So that definitely made me feel like, oh, yeah, maybe I could do this when I grow up, you know.
That's so well said. Pivoting a little bit more to education, your undergrad was at Princeton, and then you got a job in New York in advertising. How did you dabble between a full-time career and fueling your passion for being in the industry?
I mean, at that time, once I graduated high school, it was like, you know, everything at that time was about getting into a good university. And then I got into an Ivy League and I was thrilled. My parents were thrilled. And then, you know, up until that point, it was like, I told my parents, like, hey, listen, all this performance stuff is just for extracurriculars for the college application. Like, it's important to be well-rounded.
Yep.
And that was the excuse. Maybe I told them, maybe I told myself. And then when I got to college, I was like, okay, now I really need to kind of just focus on the education. And literally within the first week, I was like roped into an audition for this dance company called DZAC at Princeton. And again, just gravitated towards the performing arts again, like couldn't help it. And so I was acting, dancing, singing. I was in two a cappella groups. I was in two different dance companies. I was doing musical theater and plays at Princeton. And my junior summer is when I decided to, I did this internship in this advertising technology firm. And that was the longest period of time I had gone. It was 3 months where I had not, the longest time I had gone where I hadn't been in a dance studio, or I hadn't been on a stage, or I hadn't been performing in some way or rehearsing in some way. And I excelled at the job. I did very well. I enjoyed the environment. It's fast paced, learned a lot. Something was deeply off. And I could feel that there was a void, a creative void of sorts. And somewhere along the way, I got a job offer to start the next year once I graduated. But then I simultaneously had the clarity that I need to be a performing artist professionally. Like, that has to be what I must do. And that's when I told my friend Shika that this is what I want to do with my life. And I changed my entire curriculum at Princeton then, because I'd finished my requirements already. I just took all performance oriented classes. And then at some point in my senior year, the VP of sales from that company, AppNexus, had called me and said, hey, like, just checking in, like, you haven't accepted your offer yet. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh yeah, I still have a week, right? He's like, yeah, I mean, you have a week, but like everyone else has accepted. Yeah. Like, just kind of want to see, like, are you on the fence? Like, what's going on? And I was like, if I'm being honest with you, I want to be an actor. This guy's name was Arun Mani. I don't know his full last name, but he'd go by Mani. And he was like, he started laughing because he's just like, what do you mean? I was like, I want to be an actor. And he was like, okay, all right, fine. Well, you know, we're a late stage startup. Like, what do you need? We'll give you the flexibility to do so. You want to take a 2-hour lunch to go audition? We got you. You need to like reduce your workload because you have a play coming up? Fine, we got you.
That's awesome.
Like, and I was like, my Princeton overthinking analytical brain also had reached out to a bunch of Princeton alums who I knew were friends of mine, who I knew were now working professionally as artists. And I spoke to one guy, his name is Jeff Cooperman. Incredible choreographer and dancer. He just won a bunch of musical theater Broadway like awards recently for a musical that he had choreographed. And I, at that time, he had just graduated 2 years ago. And I said, hey, like, I got this job offer, but I know I want to work as professionally as an artist. Like, what should I do? And he told me, I always remember, he said, look, you still got to pay rent, right? Like, you can be a professional artist, but then you're going to be waiting tables and being a bartender, or you're going to do something, right? And so if this company is giving the flexibility to do it, then why not? You're generating revenue there. You have stability and consistency there. And then it allows you to really flourish and do stuff in the performing arts. And so that's what I did. It took some time to get there to find the balance. But then I started doing a lot of off-Broadway theater while I was at AppNexus.
it's commendable that you were wearing multiple hats, but I'm more curious to know why advertising when you were doing performance, like why not like join a company that was focused on films? Like how did you land up in advertising? I'm asking because I'm in advertising too. So that's why.
Yeah, it was honestly, I don't think there was that level of thought behind it. Like at that, it's kind of like for me at that time, it was like choosing a university. It's like, you know how when someone says, hey, do you want to go to Yale? Do you want to go to Princeton? Do you want to go to Cornell? Or do you want to go to Harvard? It's like, I mean, they all sound great. Like you can go and visit the schools, but like, let's be honest, it's not like worlds apart of an experience. There are definite differences, you know? And so for me, like my first job at a university was also kind of like that. It was like, I want to be at a place that's going to invest in my growth. It's going to be like a high caliber company position where, you know, I get to really flourish and build my skills, like regardless of the industry. I never thought that I would stay in advertising technology. I thought, you know, I'd pivot. Truth be told, like in that internship, all the internships I applied to, I think that might have been like one of three that I got into. And just like the vibe just felt right. And I joined them. And my experience at the company was so good during my internship that it was a no-brainer that I wanted to join that company. I didn't really think beyond that in terms of like industry I wanted to be in.
Yeah, no, I think I'm definitely taking notes of like, you got to continue to pursue your dreams irrespective. Like sometimes you have to put your head down and do what's necessary. Like your, you know, mentor said that you need to pay rent. So like you need to go ahead and do what's right for you. But then at the same time, be transparent at your workplace so that you can have that time and mental space to be able to contribute to your creative side. Because I've met so many people, especially in our generation. I mean, I really have to give it to our parents for giving us this soft cushion that we're able to between two careers, but to have like a professional life but then to also build something on the side is commendable. And then you are a prime example of how you made your passion now your full-time dream, and I think that is what everyone's trying to pursue here. So I'm hoping that the audience is taking notes and is feeling uplifted and inspired that everybody kind of has this journey that they go through.
Yeah, and it's look, eventually you have to take the scary leap and quit the job, right? Like, and I think that's what I'd realized is like, my plan was if the performance and stuff would get to such an extent that I no longer could maintain my job, all right, well, that's a good sign that I quit now, you know, is the way I thought about it. But I will say the first maybe 8-9 months of my job, and this is the big challenge when you're choosing consistency and stability in a career, when really your heart lies in a profession that's inconsistent, unstable, unpredictable, is when you choose the choose the plan B, or you're like nurturing plan B as you go, it's very easy to slip into complacency and have plan B become plan A. And you don't even realize it happened unconsciously. Like it happened to me, where it's like, you know, I was making good money, I was in New York City, my girlfriend, now my wife at the time, was living in Murray Hill, just about, you know, 30 blocks north of me. I was living life. I was eating well. I was like, you know, like doing very little at work and still being rewarded and getting paid well, never checked my bank account. I mean, like, it's just like, life was great. I was in my early 20s in New York City. Like, what are you going to do? And, but I wasn't doing all the things that I had promised myself I'd do, which was like really go after the performance. And really what it took was an ugly bout of jealousy to really spring me into action. My wife, my girlfriend, Anuja, had booked the Broadway reading of Meera Nair's Monsoon Wedding when she was making a stage adaptation. This was many years ago. And she was playing the lead, Aditi. And I was so, so happy for her. So like excited for her. But it created this immense sense of like, insecurity in me of like, it wasn't comparative to her, but it was just like every day as she came back from rehearsal, it was a reminder of what I wasn't doing, of what I should be doing.
Yeah.
And that something triggered something in me. And that Christmas is when I got onto Actors Access. I applied to a bunch of different projects and I came back and I gave an audition. That's when I did my first off-Broadway play. Like I immediately then jumped into it and then life really got crazy. So I would say for anyone who's planning to straddle between two careers, be careful because it's intoxicating. That paycheck is intoxicating.
But then now when your dreams are coming true, that's like amazing. It's beautiful. So I'm glad that you were able to find that little trigger moment in your life where plan A continued to be plan A and you didn't let plan B slip away and become plan A almost immediately. But like, yeah. How long did it take for you to continue to be in Broadway and theater and then kind of take that leap of faith and be like, nahi, ab main Bombay ja raha hun. Like, when did that happen?
That was interesting. That was like my parents were coming to visit me in New York for the first time, and now I'm like financially independent, and yeah. I was like, I'm gonna show them a great time. And they'd kind of gotten a glimpse of my life over the last like day and a half, 2 days, and you know, they'd seen that I was, you know, I was waking up at like 6, so it was 5:30, and you know, headed to work. I would work until 6 p.m and then I'd like have rehearsals and stuff from 7 to like midnight. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, in this cycle of like either rehearsing, performing, or working, and I was spread really thin. And I'm so grateful for that time. It's important to experience that. And so then my dad came, and I thought, you know, they'd be happy. You know, they'd be really happy. Like, wow, like, kid went to an Ivy League school, like, yeah. Got a job, and look at that. He's doing his performance stuff on the side. He seems happy. But my dad, in his wisdom, very forward thinking, was like, in Hindi, in Haryanvi, he was basically like, what are you doing, bro? Like,
yeah.
You know, like, kar kya raha hai? Ek tang yahan, ek tang wahan. Like, you got one foot here, you got one foot there. If you continue like this, you're not going to succeed in either.
Yeah.
So if you still feel after all this, after high school, childhood, college, all these times we've said, hey, focus on your education, isn't that like you still feel strongly about being a performer, then it's time to take both feet and take the leap, and leap into that profession. And so he was the one who was like, I want you to quit your job and do this full time.
That is beautiful.
Which is very rare. Very, very rare. And I think that the lesson for like all immigrant parents, Indian parents, South Asian parents is like, you know, so much, like you said, rightfully, like so much of what they worked hard for was opportunity for us, right? Comfort for us. But I think that they sometimes forget that opportunity and comfort for us is being able to do what we love. Like, yeah. That's what they actually worked hard for.
Yeah.
You know, obviously to create financial stability, yes, but that's entry level, you know, what they worked hard for. The next thing above that, you know, yeah. If your parents meet a certain income class, it's like, no, they worked hard so that you can make your passion your profession.
Exactly.
So you don't have to go to work every day like they did and hate their job, but do it anyways for their family.
Yeah.
And so that my dad somehow, I guess, recognized that. And I think he recognized some spark in me as a performer. And I think he believed in me. And he said, quit your job. And I was like, are you out of your mind? It's funny because it's like he was ready and I wasn't. I was scared. I was like, what if I'm not good enough? I didn't say that out loud, but that's really in hindsight, like what it was. What if I'm not good enough? And you know, when someone hands you something that you wanted your whole life, somewhere like your hand starts to like, you know, yep. Your hand starts to shake a little bit.
Yes.
And yeah. So, you know, I told him, I said, look, you know, what about like my finances? Like I'm finally financially independent. He's like, yeah, so what? Like I supported your dumbass for like 22 years. Like what's another 2 years, right? Yeah. Like he's just like within means, of course, but he's like, I think of it as paying for your grad school. I would have done that anyways.
Wow.
Again, that's like, me being in a position of financial privilege, right? That my father can even say something like that. But he was like, I want you to quit your job. And so I was like, I can't quit it tomorrow, Dad, but give me 6 months and I promise I'll quit my job.
Yeah.
I mean, let me tie up loose ends. Let me figure out what I want to do, how to like actually like navigate the life of an artist. And so in those 6 months, somewhere intuitively, it came to me that I need to go to India. And I quit my job and I left. I think some factors that probably contributed to that was I probably was intimidated maybe a little bit by the talent in New York City. Okay. And I thought like, maybe I'm just not, you know, maybe it's too hard to start here. Maybe I should go to India. It'll be easier, which is like so dumb because like India is way more like so many more people. But I think some part of me was like, hey, you know, like I'm, in weird way, I was more Indian than I was American in some ways. In those rooms, like when I was going to musical theater auditions and stuff, like that music and that dance form didn't feel as authentic, and I wouldn't feel as connected to it as I did, you know, what was happening in Bollywood at the time.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I feel like that's a better, lines up better with me, and I speak the language and everything. So let me do that. And my sister-in-law, now sister-in-law, but at the time had also made that kind of leap maybe like 6 months earlier.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she did it. Maybe I can do it too. So I was inspired by her and did it.
Love this. I love it. Kudos to your dad. I think you just need that one person to just, you know, give you that push and let you do what you want. Say that the world is your oyster, go do what you want. You know, it's like that job, beta, jile, apni zindagi kind of moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really beautiful. And so now we're in Bombay now. And, you know, and there's a whole notion, like when you're an outsider, it's very hard. And, you know, how do you kind of break into the industry? So when you were in Bombay, what were those challenges like? What challenges did you face? And what was that first rejection? And how did you go from there?
You know, moving to India is, if you've never lived in India and you don't have family in India, like it, well, I didn't have any family in Bombay or in Maharashtra. It's going to be a challenge. I learned the hard way. Those first 3 months was really just like understanding culturally how to communicate, and I don't mean like language wise, but how to communicate culturally in India to get things done, to be effective, to how to bypass the process and the system. You know, what does jugaad mean, and how do you employ that in your day-to-day life? You know, what's the workaround? So it took some time. It also, like, you know, I spent most of my life in the States, so yeah, I wasn't used to a lot of kind of the lack of amenities or the lack of comfort that I had in the States.
Yeah.
And also like being alone, right? Like I didn't have any family or friends. So it's like starting life from scratch in a way, which is an adventure in and of its own.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of rejection. Honestly, I don't recall ever being terribly hurt by rejection. That's not like what left a emotional, like that didn't have an emotional imprint on my mind as much as the first time I got accepted for a job.
Okay.
I think I knew coming in that I was going to be rejected a ton of times. I was prepared for that mentally. I didn't think it was going to be, you know, that hard, but it was, I believe, 3 months in that I booked my first Tic Tac commercial.
Okay.
I remember the choreography was like, and it shot in Bangkok. And I remember getting that call, and I remember just like got off the phone and immediately just bawling, and just like I was just so relieved that in this very foreign land to me, that I thought would feel a lot more familiar, but foreign to me, and in an industry that I didn't think that might or might not accept me, and after so many rejections, it's like someone said, yeah, that kid, I like that, that kid's gonna be good, we should take him.
Yeah.
And that was just so, it just filled me with so much gratitude and hope, and like, and it was just a small commercial, you know, but at that time it was everything. It was like, I got a commercial.
Yes.
You know, like, wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that was probably something that really left an imprint on me. And then once you get one thing, then it snowballs, because you energetically, you're on the vibration of having gotten something.
Yeah.
And that abundance, you're in that plane of abundance, you're like, oh, I got it once, I can get it twice. Then the next challenge becomes like, how do I get an actual like acting role in like a narrative, you know, in storytelling, you know, not just a commercial. So
how did you see your like advertising skills that you had in like corporate America and then your theater skills kind of translate into this whole big fat world of Bollywood? Do you feel like you took some skills away from there?
I mean, definitely some like experience. Like while I was doing off-Broadway theater, I also had a manager in New York. I'd done a commercial in the States. I had done background work in the States. I'd, you know, done some photo shoots, and I'd done like a print ad. So I kind of understood what it's like to be on a set somewhat. So I mean, definitely like skill sets in terms of craft and acting obviously translated. In terms of that AppNexus and being in a corporate environment, like probably it helped me the most in the way of like being in a corporate environment, kind of, if you're type A, you kind of often excel. And I was definitely very type A. Like when I first got there to India, I, unlike my sister who just knew who everyone was, you know, by heart, I didn't know. Like I followed Bollywood really closely up until probably middle school. And then after that, I really got into international cinema and Hollywood. I wasn't watching as much Bollywood. My sister did her whole life, still does.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know how Sajid Nadiawala is connected to who, or how Kajol and Rani Mukherjee are connected, or like who this director is or who that director is. I didn't know all that. And I was like, well, if I'm working in this industry, I better know. Mm-hmm. So I created in classic, like, you know, corporate, or like kind of, I don't want to say corporate, but like, given my education system and being type A, I created index cards. I still have them. It's like a stack like this thick. At the time, I was like, well, I landed up in Bombay and I was like, well, what do I do? Where do I begin? Where do I start? And I was like, well, here's something that I can do. Let me at least like educate myself on the industry and the people who have left an impact on it.
Is it true though, like when you're in Bombay and you're like going from one audition to the other, every video, every picture I've seen, there's so many people wanting to do the same thing. They've left their, you know, specific towns, come to Bombay just to kind of, you know, be an actor. What's the competition like? And like, I'm sure you must have had phases where you were overwhelmed. I know you said your first commercial took 3 months, but when was that first big role and what was it?
I'll speak to the first part. Like first, the amount of people that leave their homes or small towns and come to Bombay to become actors, it's like, it's a really large number.
Yeah.
Staggeringly large. And when you go to these like commercials for, you know, ads and commercials, and that they call them in India, TVCs, TV commercials, you just a huge line of people. And it's very disorganized. It's like in a shack. Like you would not imagine, like in the States, when I was in New York, I go for an audition. It was like a high rise building. Like you have to like sign in. It's on the 15th floor. And then there's a receptionist there with a computer. And she's like, hey, could you sign in here? Please have a seat. We'll be with you in 10 minutes. And you have a specific time slot. In India, it wasn't like that. It was like, come one, come all, right? It was like, come from, you know, we start at 10 and we'll go until 8. And like, it's starting at 10 meant like the guy's going to show up at like 10:45 to open the studio. It was just like, and there'd just be honestly hundreds and hundreds of people over the span of 3 days for the same ad. And if you went there and you waited in line, by the time your turn came, you'd be sweaty because you're in the humidity. Even the room inside didn't have an AC often. It just had like a bunk, a fan, and people are pushing and shoving. And so all of that, like the lack of personal space compared to, you know, kind of an American upbringing, you know, it's just drastically different. So a lot of adjustments for me there. But, you know, if you want to make it in this profession, you got to be a little bit of a hustler. You got to understand like how to work the system. And so that's what I did. You know, like I would go to the very front of the line, and like hindsight this is like kind of fucked up, but I would go to the front of the line, and I would, because oftentimes they had international, like modeling agencies would have like international models come in who didn't speak Hindi, so I would go to the front of the line and I'd speak in a very thick American accent.
Okay.
And I'd be like, hey, I'm so sorry, like where am I supposed to go? And they're like, you know, sir, please go, you know, and their English was not at that level. Nowadays, I mean, not everyone, but some people's wasn't at that level, so they were struggling to communicate. And I would just pretend like I didn't understand what they said. I would just like, I'm like, yeah, I don't know what you're saying. My agent told me to come here, and I'm supposed to leave in another 25 minutes. So, and then they just get fed up with me, and they'd be like, okay, yeah, come in, sit. And I'd get in that way, and it didn't always work, of course, but I'd come and I'd sit down, and then they'd give me the script for like the firang, or the, you know, whatever, the foreigner.
Yeah.
And then I would just switch, and I'd just be like, ha, ye bhi karta main, wo bhi kar leta hun. And they would look at me like, this motherfucker speaks Hindi.
But now he's already here, so.
Yeah, he's already here. And you know, I ended up doing that so much for probably like a good year and a half. In the first 2 years, I did 40 commercials. I just would go every day. I must have been giving 12 to 15. I must have been giving like 15 auditions a week, easily. Wow. At least two a day.
Wow.
and sometimes like four in a day, you know, like it was mayhem. It was crazy. And you do that enough, you end up getting to know the casting directors. They end up recognizing you, knowing you. You end up knowing that this casting director says that he's going to open at 10. Better I come at 10:20 because I know that's when he's going to open actually. Or like if they have a three-day auditions, like we've been running it for 3 days, don't go on the first or second day. Come on the third day, because by then the client will have changed the script. So if you had been shortlisted on the first day, they're going to call you back again. So you learn all these things as you go. And if you're sharp and you stay with it and you find ways to work the system, you excel. That's kind of the cool thing about India, is like, at least the Indian film industry, it still functions kind of like the wild, wild west. Our unions there aren't nearly as strong. So actors' time and artists' time is completely taken for granted and wasted, quite honestly, which is a shame. But because it's the wild, wild west, you can also like rise up quite quickly if you know how to socialize and make smart decisions. The second part of your question, which was what was the first like role mm-hmm. that I got? The first role that I got was for a Marathi film.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you said big role or just any role?
No, that was your commercial film, right? Even if it's Marathi, it's still a part of the Indian film cinema.
I'll say this. Actually, you know what? I'll give you the story of the first like big role that I got that made me feel like, ooh, okay, I'm doing something. So I played the lead of this Marathi film. But there's two leads. The female was Maharashtrian and spoke Marathi, and I was supposed to play this American guy who comes and goes on this pilgrimage called Vari. The film's name is Nirmal.
Okay.
I think they still, that's what the working name was. I'm pretty sure that's still the name. Yeah, Nirmal. Nirmal en route is what it used to be called. I think it's now Nirmal. And I had an incredible experience working on that. And it was tough to shoot because we were shooting like rural parts of Maharashtra. But it must have been like, whatever, 25, 30 day schedule. I was acting every single day. And then I came back to Bombay, and then I had a call back for Made in Heaven that Zoya Akhtar was doing.
Yeah.
And this is, again, initial days. Amazon Prime and Netflix, they're creating content in India, but not at the scale that they are now.
Yeah.
So Made in Heaven audition happened, and I went in, and there was Karan Mali and Nandini Shrikant were the two casting directors. Awesome people. They've cast me in a bunch of stuff. They do great work. Karan came out and asked me, like, hey, do you want to read the scene with me? And I was like, no, I'm good. And it's like this next level of confidence because of the experience I'd just gone through. I was like, it's just another day, like acting, like another scene, you know. And I'd done the prep and really worked hard on the scene. I'd done the prep. I understood the character, and I was like, I don't want to go through it with Karan and prematurely get notes. You know, I want to go in raw with my take for Zoya. So Zoya Akhtar was in the room, Nandini was behind the camera, and I wasn't my normal charming self. I was just like, I walked in kind of in the space, in the zone of the character, and I was like, hey Zoya, how's it going?
And, I cannot believe,
you know, because in India also there's this like, you know, it's always Zoya ma'am.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Ankur sir. It's like, it's always that Ritika ma'am. It's there's all this like subservience in the culture, and like being an American, that just doesn't feel authentic to me. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, I respect Zoya, but it's weird to call her Zoya ma'am just culturally. So I was like, hey Zoya, nice to meet you. I was respectful, of course, but I wasn't like, yeah, what's up? Like, you know. And then I sat
like
down.
Your character in Shahzada.
yeah, exactly. And so I sat down and I was just like, you know, she's like, do you have any questions for me? I said, no, I don't think so. And then we did the scene. And I was just really in it. I was really connected. And at the end of the scene, the line ended on her. Zoya likes to read herself.
Okay.
For an in-person audition like that, she likes to be the reader herself. So I was reading with her. And so she had the last line in the scene. Her character did. And so she said that. And then it's like a relatively emotional scene. I'm very connected to her. And I go to open my mouth to say something, but I don't. Because out of respect for the writer who I'm sitting with, right? Like, you don't disrespect the writing by improvising like that. And so I, you know, they called cut. And then she looked at me. She's like, you were going to say something, weren't you? I was like, yeah. She's like, what were you going to say? And I was like, I was going to say this. And she's like, ooh, I like that. I'm going to write that down. And then she like added it to her thing. And it made me feel like that was probably the first moment where I had someone who was renowned and accomplished in the industry look at me as an artist, not as just someone who she'd like to hire, but someone she felt was a collaborator. Like yeah. her taking my impulse to say something at the end of that scene and being like, ooh, that's good. I want to play with that idea, maybe incorporate it, made yeah. me feel like, oh man, I have a right to sit at this table. I deserve to be here. And then of course I got the role. And that was another form of validation. Yeah. And that really helped kind of make me feel like I belonged, and that kind of created the momentum for other stuff.
That's beautiful. First of all, congratulations on all of the work that you've been doing. It's amazing. And that's literally leading up to my next question, but it's also so pure to see such an, again, a big director kind of be humble. I think humbleness and work ethic just goes such a long way. So yeah, for I think anyone who's again, like dabbling into different careers or even wants to pursue creatively a profession like this, I think just like being humble, down to earth, but then knowing where to do the jugaad and being very like hardworking, I think it just like pays a long way. We're seeing that with you. We've seen that with a lot of other people as well. So yeah, keep doing what you're doing. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I was going to say, you know, for people who are venturing to take the leap in this profession, especially if they're planning to, you know, jump to a different country.
Yeah.
It's like you cannot, while the jugaad and the hustle and all that stuff is important to get you in the door. Once you're in the door, man, if you don't have what it takes, if you don't have the craft down, if you haven't done that work, it doesn't matter. I know so many people who came in my batch, as we call it, right? They came to Mumbai the same time I did. And they all like little by little left, right? I've been there 10 years. Like a lot of them left in a wave in the second year. A lot of them left in the fifth year. A lot of them tried to stick it out till the eighth. But at the end of the day, if you haven't done the work on your craft and you don't feel confident there, all the socializing and stuff doesn't mean anything. Because there's friends of mine or acquaintances of mine who are known within the industry because they go to all the right parties, they have the right friends, but they're not booking work and they haven't built a career.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, then building a network is just a small part of it, is my belief.
That's true. And I, like you rightly said, you know, some people do want to pursue acting for the right reasons. It's not just for the glitz and glam. They truly, truly love it, but somehow maybe didn't have the bandwidth or the financial stability or the experiences that maybe helped them go to theater or take classes when they were growing up, or even like went to school to study film in that sense, you know? So what advice would you have for individuals like that? How can they break into the industry?
Well, first month, you know how I said I created index cards? Like, you're in a creative profession, be creative, goddammit. Like, just be creative. Like, find creative solutions. We're in a collaborative medium. Film is a very collaborative medium. I would watch films and shows, and I would see something that I, like a monologue that I really liked or a performance, I'd hit pause. And I would take out, you know, my laptop or a pen and paper, and I would, you know, turn off the audio, and I would play it back and just read the subtitles and copy it down. I put it away and I revisit it a week later. I'd learn the lines in the monologue, and then I would set up a tripod and a camera and I would perform it.
Yeah.
And I would watch it back and be like, okay, I suck. Why do I suck? How do I be better? Like, in each stage in your journey, you realize you require a different tool for yeah. to fix your craft and to make it better. And you know, there's many creative ways to do that. Go watch plays, go read plays, read books, read biographies of actors and directors, and learn about cinema from every which lens that you can. There's just so much to do. It's yeah. endless. I think even in the way of like, I tell actors all the time, like take a dance class, take singing classes. Like, it all feeds into, you know, you use your voice as an actor, you use your body as an actor. So dance yeah. and singing are all very useful, and vice versa. Same advice to singers and dancers too, to take acting classes. So I just think that conversation I have with my sister all the time, there's a lot of downtime when you're not working as an actor. And so we have to do the best to use it. I've written my own monologues. I've written, like, you know, larger stories. Just use your creative instrument in every which way.
Yeah, I love that. And also, I've seen your sister. Was it Tara versus Blanc, that the movie's name?
Yeah.
She's really good at it. She's really good
Yeah,
at it.
she was really good in it.
I saw her and I'm like, I've seen her somewhere. I'm like, okay, she's Anker's sister. This is huge that she's also doing a movie. Was that her first movie?
That was her first movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she had done a show as a lead called Broken But Beautiful before that, and she'd worked with R. Madhavan and Decoupled on Netflix. But that was her first.
Oh, right. Yes, I've seen that too.
Yeah, that was her first movie, and you know, everyone's journey is so unique. Like her whole childhood knew and was like unapologetic about, I'm going to be a Bollywood star.
Aww.
That's what she wanted to be, and she knew it. She had the posters of Aishwarya and all the heroines on her. Like, she was very different than me in that way.
Yeah.
She wanted to go to Pune for college. She was like, and I asked her now, I was like, why were you so hell-bent on going to Pune? Like, you could go to, she went to Boston University, she went to BU. I was like, Pune is so, there's nothing wrong with Pune. It was just like, it's so random for you, for this
Don't hate on
California girl.
Pune. I'm from Pune.
I'm not hating on Pune at all. I think Pune is great. It's just a really random decision for a girl brought up in
Yes,
California to want to
fair
go to
enough.
Pune,
Yeah.
right? Like, she could have gone to Manali. She could have gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But she's like, now in hindsight, I was like, what? So I asked her, why did you want that? She was like, I knew that Pune was close to Bombay on the map, and I just knew I wanted to work in the film industry. I thought maybe I'd go there for college. And so she'd always had it on her mind to
Wow.
perform. And to see her rise, and just like, she came, she got work almost immediately. And Tara versus Bilal like happened not even 2 years after she had arrived. Like, that's so rare.
Yeah.
But like, you see her performance on screen, and she's like, you know how we say like some people are just natural,
Born to do
like
it.
they're just born to do it. Like, Sonia is just a natural. I wasn't like that. I sucked in the beginning. I still have all my auditions saved. I have my very first audition that I gave saved on my laptop, and every now and again I like to go back and look at it, just especially if I'm feeling down on myself and I feel like, man, you know, I didn't hit this career milestone this year, and then I like to look back and at my previous audition and be like, well, you've come a long way,
Oh
it's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sonia's next level. Sonia is
God,
just
that's awesome. I'm
magnetically
excited
insane.
for both of you. Well, for you now, we've seen you in a variety of roles, from Four More Shots, Please, to Made in Heaven, to Shahzada. I'm waiting on the next seasons for both of those. And for Shahzada, I really enjoyed your performance. It was so different than all of your characters. What's next for you, and like, what is your strategy in choosing your scripts and roles?
Honestly, I used to have a strategy, and then, you know, with each step you take in your career, it starts to shift and stuff. And now I just take it as it comes. But really, the goal now is like, I want to do work that's either going to really creatively inspire me, or a role that, like, I recently played the role of a cop, a police inspector in something, that's coming on Hotstar Disney Plus soon. And like, you know, the whole reason I did that, the primary reason I did that was I was like, I've never played an inspector before. That would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't necessarily that the project was like the same caliber of Shahzada in terms of budget and this and that, but it was just like, this is something new I haven't done before. So that drives me a lot when I choose projects, but also drives me is like, is this going to move the needle of my career significantly? Like, just about a week ago, there was a film for Dharma, which I won't say what, but you know, they had offered me a role in that was like, you know, 4 or 5 days of work. It wasn't a significant role, but it was with, both of my scenes were with the lead actors, and really great actors. You know, respect them. It would have been fun to work with them, but I was like, okay, I could do that, and it'd be fun. It'd be good, but it's nothing new. It's like, the audience isn't going to see me in anything new. I'm not going to get anything new out of that per se. I've done that before. I've done a lot of roles where it was like 7 to 10 days, you know, 4 to 5 days on something. And I just feel like, I don't think that that's, I think I'm ready for more.
Yeah.
I'm ready for roles with a little bit more scope now. And, you know, I've had the really great pleasure of working with such incredible actors in a more limited scope. I'm now ready to kind of expand and do something a bit bigger. So those are the kind of things that I think about when I choose roles these days.
Fair enough. And are there any projects that you can name that we're going to see you on?
Yeah, there's one project that I, the one I just finished shooting, that you should see. It should release maybe next month or the month after, on Disney Plus Hotstar. It's called Rita Sanyal. It's got me and Ada Sharma in it. This really funny actor, Manik Popneja, and he's really talented too. And Rahul Dev, who was a villain, if you remember, from the 90s. So he's he's in it as well. So we got some cool, interesting people. It's kind of like an adaptation of a series of, it's a short, it's adaptation of a series of short stories about this detective lawyer that is being played by Ada. And I'm like the, I'm like the love interest, but also like the inspector detective who's helping her as we solve these Scooby-Doo cases.
Okay. Okay. I'm excited to watch it. Is it, do you think it's like more suspense or is it comedy suspense?
I think it's just like, it's not even suspect. I mean, it's just, it's just action packed. It's just a thriller. It's very fast paced. It has comedic moments in it for sure. Yeah. But it's definitely more suspense, thriller, action.
Okay. I love that genre. I will definitely message you when I watch it and when it's out.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So if you could go back in time, now you've had 10 plus years of experience in the industry, from hustling to getting your first gigs, to 40 commercials and whatnot. It's been a journey and you're only going to climb the ladder from here. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give to your younger self?
So much, but probably the one I give the most is, focus on yourself, and celebrate your little wins, and don't let a measure of your success be comparative to, you know, to what other people are doing.
I love that.
It's really, it's really easy in this profession to get caught up in like, and not even, it's not so much like jealousy in the ugly way. It's just like, you know, you're going to audition with people, you see the same faces again and again, you guys kind of came up together, and you know, you see someone who's doing really well and you're like, oh man, I didn't have any releases this month or, you know, this year or whatever it is. And you're like, man, maybe I've fallen behind, and you get down on yourself. You know, along with the rejections that we face as actors every day, it's really hard to deal with the lulls in between work. And during that time, if there's other colleagues of yours that are excelling and thriving, it's easy to feel even more like you're not doing enough. And that's just like not true. Just everyone has their journey. You know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I think I was really obsessed at a young age. I would like, whenever I'd see some actor who was incredible, I would like search them on IMDb to see how old they were. Or even if they weren't young, like if, whether it was George Clooney, I'd be like, oh my God, when did he start? I'd go scroll all around, bound into their IMDb, and be like, oh, okay. They got their big break at 31. So I have until 31. Like, it's so futile. It's so immature. And it's just like, everyone has their own journey. And I've learned now in this profession, it's not linear. It's exponential growth. It just takes you, everyone is just one project away from becoming a superstar. That's just, that's, whether that's Hollywood or Bollywood, right? Everyone's just one project away. So that's the advice I would give to my younger self, is like, dude, take it easy, have fun, keep focusing on the craft, and know that your time will come. You can't force it. You can't strong arm the universe. And you definitely cannot invest any time thinking about how you compare to your contemporaries.
I absolutely love that. And we've spoken a lot about it in my previous episodes where we talk about running your own race. And I think you kind of summed it up really, really well. My last question for you, and this is a question I ask all my guests, is what are three ingredients, and this is to go with the name of the podcast, so what are three ingredients that fill your cup of success?
Three ingredients that fill my cup of success. Compassion. Passion. and... maybe instead of compassion, I'll say empathy. Empathy, passion, and discipline.
Love it. I think you summed up the entire podcast with those three words that you just said, because that's exactly how you narrated your journey and your humbleness. So I really appreciate it. And I just want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast. We're so excited to watch you grow and be a part of, you know, part of this journey with you, rooting, always supporting, and it's only upwards and beyond. Thank you for inspiring and thank you for doing what you're doing.
Thank you for your wonderful question, Ritika. I had a blast. I love having good interviewers and good hosts, because really on your time, I get to introspect. It's like a therapy session, actually, is what it is. I just got a free therapy session is what's actually what happened. I wish you the best of luck, and hopefully you decide to tell a story and I get to collaborate with you on that story in the near future.
Oh, thank you. We'll manifest that for myself as well.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit the follow button on all your favorite streaming platforms. Go follow us on social media at Chai with Champs and share with your friends and family. Share with